So funny.
Now recording. Hello and welcome to the Brothers Geek Podcast. I'm Patrick Schmaltz with my two brothers, Christopher Schmaltz. Hello, Christopher.
Two Good of morning. Your brothers. We do have another brother. He just doesn't participate in the podcast.
The unnamed
fourth brother who shall not be named.
He's appeared on the podcast.
I know he has. I'm teasing.
He's been on the podcast at least four times. He'll never listen to this, so it's fine. We can say whatever
it's really
we want
fine. I pay attention to language, and sometimes I'm like, a little excluding. Yes. Sometimes
I'm sorry. Chris. I'm sorry that I'm excluding to our normal brother, our level one brother,
normal.
who has no interest.
He's a muggle.
He does have interest. His son is Joey is like a borderline. He's getting to be like a level three geek. Like he loves the MCU. He loves Star Wars. He loves Legos. He plays video games.
I mean, we haven't. This is maybe a discussion for another time. But we haven't talked about the geek levels in a long time. And I feel like since we've done this podcast, the geek levels have changed dramatically. It's much more normal for people to be like kind of into the Marvel universe.
I think you're right.
Comic book things have shifted.
The spectrum has shifted.
The spectrum has shifted a bit. Yep. You know, it's like like you really got to be pretty hardcore to be like
superhero movies are the reason people go to the movies these days.
For the most part, those are like the popcorn movies, and they've like shown like normal people a lot about superheroes and superhero movies, and like got them interested in comics and video games, like superhero video games. And I don't know. We got to think about that. Cause like I had kind of a hard line like years ago, especially like conventions. I remember going and there was only like a couple of conventions every year. Now there's like every town has a big convention and tons of people show up to them. Maybe like finally these people came out to the woodwork, but man, I remember going to a Phoenix Comic Con, like when I first started working at Samurai, and it was like a couple hundred people.
Remember going to the Mesa Convention Center with you.
And
literally it was in one meeting room and you could walk the floor in like 15 minutes. It was just you walked around and there was kind of local comic book people.
Right.
There wasn't any like big celebrities.
Yeah. Local vendors and the celebrities were like
somebody who might live in town.
Yes.
And like it's funny because I went to the Phoenix Comic Con a couple years ago and I went with a couple of people who were big fans of the Outlander TV show that's on Stars.
Oh, that's
and
crazy.
They were fans of the books. And the writer of the books, Diana Gabaldon, lives in Scottsdale.
Crazy. So
she just like drove. I mean, I'm sure she got paid. I'm sure somebody wrote her a check to show up. But she like drove down to the con and she was in a meeting room of like a couple hundred people. There's, 20,000 people at the con that day.
Yeah.
But Diana Gabaldon is a legit kind of like, that's a niche thing, but people love her books. And what was it a couple years ago, Christopher, where we went, it must've been 5 years ago now, at least we went to Phoenix Comic Con and Jim Butcher showed up.
Yeah.
Mm.
And he was a great panelist. He obviously had done lots of cons. He had his whole con, con conventions.
Oh yeah. You start to see the con shtick a little bit, like the people who have prepared. Well, they start to get the same questions over and over and over, and they get like they know what works and what doesn't. Like it's kind of like a bit, It's like
it totally is, and they get paid for it. They know there's a financial component to it, and some of them, I'm sure the majority of them really enjoy interacting with their fans, but it's work for them. They definitely show up because it's part of their job.
I went to a Portland Convention Center. I have a couple of Portland stories. One was I saw the guy who plays Q, Andrew. Do you remember his name?
John DeLancey.
John DeLancey. And he was hilarious. Packed room. Yeah. Like, no one should be going to see John DeLancey.
Well, that's the thing. People have realized that
he's hilarious.
Like,
he was so funny.
If you have a specific fandom, you can generally find something at a con that you will enjoy.
This guy's known for just being Q. Like, he has a very small, like, television film career, like, I would say. And
I mean, it's been a long career, but he's never, like, been the lead in anything. He's never, like, you know, he's never top of the bill.
Room. Yeah. Like a thousand people in the room. Like, the biggest meeting hall at Portland Convention Center, and it was packed. I remember going to Portland, the small Portland con went. I mean, back when I said, like, it was a couple hundred people. This is, I mean, it's changed over the past 15 years. Like,
yeah.
I went to a con, walking around, there's a couple hundred people, and Brian Michael Bendis is walking around, and I walk up to him because I recognize him. Like, he's just walking around. Like, he's, I mean,
well, Bendis lives in Portland. He teaches writing at Portland State.
He did. Yeah. He used to teach comic book writing or graphic novel writing or something at Portland. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, back, I had a friend of mine who was his assistant. So I was sort of like one away. If we were doing the Kevin Bacon challenge, I was one away from Brian Michael Bendis. And like, to people who don't know who he is, like, the greatest comic book writer of the modern age, and pretty much made Marvel movies what they are. So if you want to go back and like dig deeper on some of these awesome Marvel movie stories, most of them have roots in Bendis's Ultimate series.
I would say almost all of them probably did.
Like all the Ultimate Spider-Mans, all the Ultimates, the Ultimate Fantastic Four, even what was the other one? Ultimate X-Men.
I mean, he wrote the main Avengers title for like 10 years.
Yeah. Well,
he was writing Ultimates, and he was writing the main Avengers title with Marvel proper for years.
Yeah.
And I mean, all of that. Yeah. He wrote.
He changed comics. Now he's writing for DC with Superman. I haven't read any of that Superman stuff.
Haven't bought comics in years, so I haven't read any of his stuff that he's done for DC.
I keep buying graphic novels, but it's tough to keep track of. Like, it's hard to keep track of like individual stories like that. Like, to go buy like a run of this person, unless you're like,
going every fucking week.
Anyways, episode number 138, recording this on May the 3rd. Not quite May the 4th, so May the 4th be with you. We always kind of do a Star Wars-esque episode. I thought that we should have done a Star Wars watch-along, because now we're doing watch-alongs.
Check out episode 137. We watch along to Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World. And if you've never seen this movie, it's a wonderful movie. It's worth the watch.
And then
I really enjoy that. I think our commentary was a lot of fun. I haven't listened to it yet again, but I think we had a lot of fun.
I think we had fun. So
I had one more point to make about going to conventions, and I've said it before on the podcast, and I'll keep repeating it. I have done multiple con carries where people have never been to a con before.
I like that.
Yeah, and they don't. And even if they have like a general knowledge, just because almost everybody has a general knowledge of superheroes, especially Marvel superheroes these days, because they go to the movies because they're the biggest movies out there. If you go to a convention and you're open to the experience, you will have a good time.
Yep.
I have not had an experience where people was, and if you, I mean, obviously there's caveats to that.
If you're even considering it, there's built-in curiosity and interest. That's step one.
Exactly. Right? So. Yeah, if you're considering, there's built-in curiosity and interest. There's caveats on that. If you can't handle crowds, if you feel overwhelmed in those kind of situations, you will. If you are frustrated by standing in lines all day, if you're frustrated by masses of people, that will affect your ability to enjoy a convention, because that's just part of the deal. If you go to a convention, you're going to wait in lines, and there's going to be crushes of people. So that is kind of like the first thing you have to get over, because you've never, the closest thing is going to a theme park on a busy day in terms of the level of people you'll encounter every second of the day.
You got to wonder how COVID is going to influence and impact future conventions.
Completely. Yeah.
It's
been a common thing with convention going that you go to a convention, there's a decent chance you're going to get sick afterwards.
Con crud.
It's a real thing that exists going to conventions. So
most of those people are gross, and they like you go touch a door handle.
Let's not say most. There's a decent amount of
subset who
there's a subset of convention goers
who need to work on their hygiene. How about that?
That's exactly
right. Unwashed,
slightly unwashed sometimes. Yeah. So that's some of the reality of it. But
The reality in COVID time is everybody's just gonna like wear a mask to all events like this. It's like
until there's a vaccine. I think that's right.
Yeah, I think that if you go to a big public event of any kind, people are going to be rocking masks, and you should just be used to that for at least
a year. And it's branding opportunities galore, right? There will be masks that have all your favorite heroes on them.
I would buy a cool
100%.
Someone made a mask in their house that has like a cool like superhero logo
they moved Phoenix Comic Con to September, and I definitely plan on still going. I'll take precautions that are necessary, but I can absolutely see these little mom and these little kind of artists who make their own clothes and make their own this.
In May, isn't it?
It's usually Memorial Day weekend, and they postpone it to September, which I think will be in the new normal by September. I'm hopeful the new normal of, still taking precautions, but most normalcy is back. I think I'm hopeful of that, but I can see going to cons and walking around the floor and seeing, these little mom and pop places with handmade geeky masks. On every single show
artist booth is going to have their own handmade masks.
I'll buy one.
I want to find one that looks like a night mask, like a suit of armor.
Oh, like the visor, like the
visor.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty good.
That would be fun.
I would love to find one that looks.
I think a lot of the trolley kind of fanboys will be looking for the mask that has the Joker grin on it. I think you can expect a lot of that.
Those already exist, I would imagine.
I guess Deadpool and also the Punisher.
Punisher mask will be out there. Even though, the Punisher never wears a mask. That's like,
but it'll be the Punisher symbol on it.
Oh,
yeah. Well, are the most popular. Like, he's just talking about like popularity now. There's definitely going to be
trolley fanboy popularity. Yeah. Punisher, Deadpool, Joker.
Those snarky guys who think
bros.
Is Deadpool and the Punisher the broiest part of comic book fandom?
The best part of people who embrace the Punisher.
Don't see the Punisher for what it is.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Those are the true dickheads.
They just embrace the Punisher because they think he's awesome. He kills whoever he wants.
Right. He just has a big old gun and he kills everybody.
Right.
He's badass because he does, he's that type of superhero. I'm like, you're missing the entire point of the character. It's the nuance. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. He's correct. Tragic. The Punisher tragic.
Well, and he's one of the most anti-establishment. The justice system totally failed him. He's taken matters into his own hands, and he's been embraced by this like 1% ideal of the extreme kind of conservative. Anyway, we don't have to get into
the same. It's the same idiots who show up in Michigan carrying their assault weapons.
Yeah, they embrace the state house symbol.
Same kind of deal.
Yeah, same kind of those dickheads are the one that think the Punisher is the coolest superhero.
I love reading stories about these guys who are protesting against COVID. And then they get sick. But I think it's poetic justice,
Well, I mean, it actually causes me to reflect. It causes me a lot of reflection because I'm definitely not a very good person because unfortunately, my initial impulse is that, justice. I want everyone to live a long life and be healthy human life is precious and even the idiots need to stay
even
alive
the idiots
and,
we value their
we value
allowed
their
idiots.
Life
yeah
exactly. but yeah. I have a nanosecond of well if they all die from COVID, and then I catch myself, catch myself from completing that thought.
Yeah.
Catch myself because it's an impulse.
You're right.
I like to think I'm a better person than that, but I do have a nanosecond of
the Brothers Geek are better, can want to be better than that.
Yes. It's there's definitely moments of exactly that.
Yeah, there it is.
So
I'm not wishing to be clear, I'm not wishing COVID on anyone. I don't want anyone to die from it.
Nope.
I don't advocate for the death of everyone who are idiots from COVID. So please stop.
You know, COVID doesn't discriminate, neither do we. But if you're an idiot, you're an idiot, and we're going to call you out.
Just wash your hands and don't go outside. Stay home.
Wear a mask. Yes, all of it.
All your con. No, I like to finish up our like con discussion. It's like, dude, I just really hope that these things can come back because I love this part of geekdom, and I love how I love how it's expanded, and with
I love being able to share it with people.
Yes,
I took my friend Megan a couple years ago to her first convention, and she really loved it. She's an artist, and she really liked that part of it. She draws comic book stuff. She had seen all the movies, and she was a fan. She took pictures with people in cosplay. She had a really, really good time.
That's what I'm saying.
Ashton last year, and she was like, she was literally a kid in a candy store, like experiencing that. She wants to go multiple days next year.
That's what I'm saying is there's been a paradigm shift because like when I first like back in my day, but like it wasn't as like normal. It wasn't as like culturally accepted, and now it's become like Marvel is part of the zeitgeist. It's part of the new like level twos liking Marvel movies is totally normal, like totally seen them all, obsessed with them, you know. And you bring a level two to a convention. Cons used to be like a joke, you know. They used to be like you've been to a comic book convention?
Yeah, it definitely was amongst friends of mine, you know, my law firm buddies.
Yeah,
they always smirked at me whenever I would talk about sort of going to Phoenix Comic Con or San Diego, and you know, and then they evolved to loving the Marvel movies, and you know, they would make fun of the people in costume going to Phoenix Comic Con, looking outside our window in the office, all of that, and you know, those days are over.
Yeah.
Well, I know. I would say I still get, when I tell people I'm going to Phoenix Comic Con, I will still get teased a little bit.
In terms of,
are you going to dress up? And I'm like, I'm fine with that, but. But there's still a little bit of that where it's like there's the kind of the overriding stereotype of people who go to conventions are the most dedicated fans, like the most obsessive fans. And that's just not the reality anymore.
It's not the reality.
Casual fans, quote unquote, casual fans are now the ones that are the overwhelming majority, I think, that go to conventions.
Well, and there's a lot of, you know, like when we went to Phoenix like a few years ago, it was like there was like 120,000 people. And I feel like there was like not the hardcore are not like just the only ones, like there aren't that many hardcore fans.
Well, the thing is there's even varying levels of hardcore fans. If you really, we are as hardcore as it gets and none of us cosplay.
None of us. I've never cosplayed.
I don't have a desire to cosplay. It's not how I express my fandom. But we're as hardcore as it comes. We've recorded 138 episodes of a podcast dedicated to this shit.
Hell yeah.
Hardcore.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
We just spent 20 minutes talking about conventions.
Because we missed them so much.
We missed them so much. I'm embracing obviously the social distancing. It's important to we've flattened the curve. A decent amount. Obviously there's still things that need to be done to make sure that things don't get worse again. But I think, you know, it trended well for a while, but I'm in the boredom phase of it. Like I was bored before and I was annoyed, but it's like, I really, really just want to go to the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something simple like that I'm hopefully never going to take for granted again. I really want to go.
There's drive-ins that are open here, Andrew, that we've been looking up.
There's a drive-in in Phoenix. It's just, you know, it's
drive-ins are getting a resurgence because of this thing, because you stay in your car. You don't have to like interact with others or breathe on anybody. And I mean, I've never even been to a drive-in. So
I've been to drive-ins in high school.
I went to a few when I growing up in Phoenix for sure.
Yeah. I don't particularly like. I just like sitting in a theater in a comfortable chair with the big screen. And I mean, my car is comfortable, but I definitely miss
that experience for sure.
Yeah, I miss going to movies. Yeah. I will. Once Harkins rolls back in, I will take precautions, obviously, but I will be one of those that is excited to go to the movies again.
Me too.
Yeah. I would imagine people are going to be wearing masks in the theater for sure.
Well, I thought I saw something about.
I'm sure. I bet you they will limit the density of people to start.
Oh, wow.
If they reopen, they will. Like, they will impose a requirement that you sit three seats away from people.
Yeah, they'll only. Yeah. I think they will too. I think they'll
limit the number of tickets they sell.
Yeah, they'll limit the number of tickets they sell, and they'll likely have theater monitors saying we have to spread out.
Yep, that's exactly how they'll do it. Yep.
Well, I saw a story yesterday. This isn't anything that Disney announced, but this is speculation in terms of how they'll probably do it. Whenever Disney announces they're going to open their theme parks back up in North America, likely they'll be at 50% capacity for a while.
Mm.
And they'll be implementing social.
No question. It's all about density.
It is all about density. So for whenever they announce, I mean, there's speculation that Disney won't reopen Disneyland or Disney World until.
Think of the demand for those tickets when they reopen at lower capacity. I mean, the frenzy that talk about, you know, concerts that sell out in 5 minutes. The tickets for Disney to when they open at like 25% capacity. The tickets, you know, they'll probably do some sort of methodology online, like Comic-Con had to do, where the demand is so high. That they will create a system and they will be gone in a blink of an eye. You know they will.
Oh, I'm gonna try to get tickets. I still haven't been to Galaxy's Edge.
Me neither.
We gotta.
The brothers have to go together to that.
I agree.
Before this whole thing, we were planning a trip to Disneyland in April. Remember that? Oh my god!
It's so long ago that we were talking about that.
It literally was 6 weeks ago, though.
And literally was only 6 weeks ago. It feels so long ago.
God, what a difference 6 weeks makes.
I've been commenting on this over the last week. The passage of time has, or our awareness of it, for me, list has shifted in such a weird way.
Yeah.
Like, time drags, but also I can't believe we're already in May.
Like, it's a weird paradox. I'm with you because my 50th birthday was like last week. But no, it was over a month ago.
Over a month ago.
And I'm like, everything is suspended.
We're adding all these up. We're adding all these up. We're going to have a big party once all this is over.
Yes.
We're going to celebrate all the birthdays that are passing.
There will be multiple instances of me celebrating my 50th birthday.
Hell
That will include all of us going together to Galaxy's Edge.
Hell yeah.
I'm down for that.
Yes. Hell yes.
Okay. So I would like to say that like tomorrow Disney Plus is dropping a few things, but the main one for May the 4th is Rise of Skywalker. Are either of you going to watch it tomorrow? Are you excited about that?
I'll probably watch it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't own it on Blu-ray. I haven't picked it up.
I bought it. I don't have the Blu-ray. I bought it on Amazon. So I have the deluxe digital.
There's a dust settled kind of a thing. Do you guys have any like thoughts on Rise of Skywalker since, like, do your feelings about it are they the same?
I love it.
When we recorded the last
time? I love it.
I think that once I revisit it tomorrow, I'll see how I feel about it after having months of distance, because I haven't watched it since since I saw it three times in the theater, I think two or three times, but I didn't buy the Blu-ray, so yet. I mean, I will. I mean, I think I had the reaction of the most meh reaction out of the three of us to Rise of Skywalker. Once I revisit it tomorrow, I'll give you a report on that since I've had some distance on it. What I'm also excited to drop tomorrow is the final, the series finale of The Clone Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Animated. Yeah. And
I really need to do a watch of that. I started a rewatch, and I dropped off of it. I need to watch the entire thing.
Well, yeah, this, no, I lost it in like season three, and now they're doing seven, and people are like, "This is crazy town." Like seven's crazy town. So well, maybe let me.
I've been watching it. I did the whole rewatch of Clone Wars. The original four seasons aired on or five seasons, aired on Disney XD.
Yeah,
and there was a season that was a Netflix only thing that were kind of called the Lost Missions, where it was still part of the main Clone Wars arc, but it didn't air on Disney XD. It premiered on Netflix, and the last episode of that season was kind of a series finale, and the whole chatter around series of the last with the season that's on Disney Plus right now was that there was. It's blatant fan service. Like Disney brought back Clone Wars for one final season to placate the fans that the minority
were unhappy. The earlier final season,
and that have been unhappy because there's a lot of Star Wars fans, and it's interesting to think about. There's a lot of Star Wars fans where their only experience, or the majority of their experience for Star Wars stories was the Clone Wars. Like they grew up with the Clone Wars being on Disney. Like that, like 4 or 5 years where Disney showed the Clone Wars every like Saturday evening or something like that.
Yeah,
was how they became Star Wars fans. So they were hungry for those stories. Like, and season seven now. I've been watching it in real time. It drops every Friday morning, or I wake up on Friday mornings. It drops every Friday, and I watch it. And that's not how I obviously I don't define my fandom as the Clone Wars being my Star Wars. My Star Wars existed before that, but these last few episodes, the Clone Wars has done one thing really, really well. Ahsoka Tano is one of the best characters in the entire Star Wars universe. That is hands. I am fully embracing that statement. Anakin's one time, you know, total kind of like, see if we can get girls interested in Star Wars again by having a young girl Jedi interacting with Anakin and being kind of snarky and teasing of him, like a little annoying sister. Her arc throughout the entire Clone Wars saga has been awesome. Mm-hmm. And the last few episodes of her have been awesome, and she is a character that exists in Rebels now as well. She's a character that's going to exist in Mandalorian season two, it seems like.
They cast
Rosario Dawson.
Rosario Dawson's playing Ahsoka Tano in
Mandalorian season two. So the most recent season that's airing currently on Disney XD, the finale airs tomorrow. It's been uneven, but some of the episodes have been some of the best Star Wars I've ever seen.
Wow.
Legitimately. They did. So I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's a lightsaber duel they did in the most recent episode where they did motion capture between the two people, and they did motion capture on the actual stunt people having this lightsaber fight. And it is fantastic. It is cinema level quality.
Wow.
Lightsaber fight in action, and it's worth it just to watch that. I encourage everyone to get yourself caught up, obviously, but there is moments of this most recent Clone Wars season that are some of the best Star Wars you'll watch, legitimately.
You're bringing up a weird tangent for my brain, Andrew, where it's like in the past years we've seen a real like the ugly side of Star Wars fandom, and like you know, like the ownership that people have over it, and then like Disney trying to like, and one of the biggest criticisms of the new films is how like un-risk-taking they are, or like kind of middle of the ground, and even the one that took the biggest risk got big old backlash.
The hate cult is still a real thing.
The hate cult, the Star Wars hate cult, and like I think it's interesting that you talk about like the Star Wars hate cult for season six or whatever, and then Disney trying to like fix the problem or like give the fans like, it's interesting because it's like they have this IP, but it's also, it's like it. There's such ownership over it for fans that it's like, you're ruining Star Wars for me. You're, you know, there's such a vocal group of fandom. Well, and we try to be anti-negative, but it's just sort of interesting that that's one of the reasons.
I think people advocated for the product that they love. And once I kind of think about it a little more, it totally makes sense, because you'll see young kids dressed up as clone troopers for Halloween.
Uh-huh.
Like, that is the Star Wars that they know, is the Clone
mm-hmm.
Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of
not thinking that those become stormtroopers under
exactly.
the
Empire. Exactly. They disassociate yeah. with that. They don't they don't make that connection, because they were the clones were heroes. They fought alongside the Jedi.
Right.
They're interesting characters in their own right. That's the association that they have. But the tragedy that were inherent to watching the Clone Wars on Disney as an adult, when the Clone Wars initially premiered and Ahsoka was such a prominent character, the expectation that I had was, we're going to fall in love with this character. She's going to become, the story that they will likely have for her, that my expectation was, she's going to die, and that's going to push Anakin further to the dark side. Like,
right.
Expected her to be that device, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But she's become her own character in her own right that has far exceeded, I think, my expectations for anything that she would be. If
it's sort of like
can really lay claim to, it's right. creating this great character, Ahsoka Tano.
Well, it's the rewrite of like the universe, or like the fact that like she never got brought up. We assume that she died in this time, but like,
well, it's Anakin also from a meta point of view it allows story. There's so much room in this universe to tell other stories,
mm-hmm.
which is what I'm excited for the future. There's so much room to tell more stories in the Star Wars universe,
right?
Than just the Skywalker story.
That's why the Mandalorian shines, is it's sort of like this other character, this other thing that's going on in the other side of the universe. It isn't about the Skywalkers rebuilding the Republic and all this stuff.
I don't agree with it, but a lot of people have I think The Last Jedi is the best movie of the Disney era for Star Wars. But there's a huge part of the fandom that thinks Rogue One is the best movie of the Disney era. And it has nothing to do with the Skywalkers. I mean,
Jedi in the damn movie.
Exactly. Yeah, Leia has one line because it connects it to A New Hope, but there's the room for stories in the Star Wars universe is huge.
I want more Star Wars. I'm excited for Disney to do something different
for the High Republic. I'm gonna buy those books when they drop.
We've talked about this, but we are absolutely got to be all in on.
We got to do a Brothers Geek book club on that one for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So. I don't know if I'll read like the young of, because they're gonna do comics. They're gonna do like a young adult,
age appropriate.
Yeah. And but like the brain candy written for adults, mm-hmm. kind of Star Wars novels, the High Republic novels. I'm absolutely gonna buy those. The first one comes out in August. I'm excited for it, man. Yeah, no, it's that quick.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah,
again, go back to your time dilation.
Right? I mean, it's May. They come out in August. It's the end of the summer.
Jesus.
Do you guys have anything else that you're rewatching or want to mention?
Oh, I want to mention Susan and I watched the first episode of Penny Dreadful, City of Angels.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so is it good? We're big fans of the original, so.
Yes, and it is. I have to tell you that it checks so many boxes for me. And
okay.
Susan and I were talking about this. It is, it's a fantastic show. That just straight up, if you have Showtime, you got to watch it.
Okay.
But here's why it's so amazing, because it's set in LA in 1938. And it's so smart. It's so smart because all of our lore sort of genre stuff, Penny Dreadful, very focused on European lore, right? European stories, white European stories.
Yeah.
And that's part of our cultural inheritance, right? As white Americans and United States. So that's absolutely part of it. And so I'm not dismissing that. It's absolutely part of all of our mythos, right? It's weaved into everything sort of we do. But part of what I've said many times in the past, and I'll continue to say, is part of my joy in being a fan of all this stuff is exposure to new takes, interesting takes, different perspectives, all of that. And the wonderful thing about this new show, it is 1938 LA centered on Mexican American mythos and religion and characters from that cultural landscape. And so Santa Muerte and Magda are the two supernatural.
Who are they?
Who are they? Is exactly right.
That's
Santa
awesome.
Santa Muerte is the angel of death in that religious sort of tradition.
But she is
not necessarily good, but she is the when she carries souls who pass away into the afterlife, and she is seen as the. You pray to her, she might help you, but actually she's more indifferent. She is not a benevolent, as you sort of think of those terms, benevolent. And this is me purely, I have done no research, right? I am a white male, okay? Yeah. So I have zero research. So this is purely based on the representation in this show.
Let me jump in just for a second, though, because... Well, I mean, being raised in the Southwest, we had some exposure to Mexican Catholicism.
Yes.
And that definitely factor. There's definitely the idea of a Mexican Catholicism that exists, that the Spanish brought over, that kind of melded with indigenous cultures of the Americas, the Southern America, you know, the kind of Middle Americas. So that is part of it too, isn't it? A little bit. I haven't watched it, but that seems like that's part of it a little bit, because the imagery that I'm seeing has a little bit of that. Like we've seen that living in the Southwest, like we have. Is that going on a little bit, Christopher?
Absolutely, 100%.
Perfect.
And it,
okay.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a deep dive. The Day of the Dead is the Day of the Dead is all around representations of though the mask that you see associated with the Day of the Dead. That is Santa Muerte's face.
Okay.
Okay. Female deity, folk saint, personification of death. She's also, it's about healing, protection, safe delivery of the afterlife.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and then her sister is Magda, who is a demon, who is a humans are bad. It's like a devil sort of idea. A temptress. She is the sister to Santa Muerte. Anyway, it is at the
played
heart.
Played by Natalie Dormer, who's
yes,
fantastic.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the show is set in 1938 because there was lots of upheaval. Do some research on this, and I'm going to do more. Upheaval in LA because the Hispanic community was displaced by LA's move to progress and building freeways. And so freeways went right through long-standing Hispanic neighborhoods. They were completely displaced. There were race riots and confrontations. My understanding, between Mexican Americans and LA police.
Wow.
In the enforcement of you got to get out of the way because the freeway's coming through, right? And so it's an unwritten history that is the sort of centerpiece of this tale told by the show. And the first episode is freaking phenomenal because don't forget, also in LA history, and this is part of the show too, Nazis were trying to infiltrate Hollywood and the LA of the time because it was the new frontier, right? It was the new, yeah. New York is old, bastion America, LA is an opportunity. And there was Nazis in LA trying to infiltrate politics, Hollywood.
Well, that's part
power,
of
the power structures in LA too. So there are Nazis involved. Well, in, the other part of the show too.
Yeah, that I mean, I haven't watched it yet, but just you saying Hollywood and kind of the new frontier. Hitler was a film fan. Mm-hmm, like he had part of his thing as the Nazi Party was propaganda films. Like he had a minister of propaganda who made films glorifying the Reich and stuff like that. So like Nazism trying to infiltrate the telling that kind of that story, even in a fictionalized way. And
it looks like as I'm reading,
if that was part of it, that'd be so crazy.
It looks like as I'm reading this, that Magda is a creation of the show's creators and writers.
Okay.
That it's not Santa Muerte is absolutely a centerpiece, but the creation of Magda was to provide for, counterpoint.
Like,
and so it looks like it doesn't have any role in Mexican American folk religion or culture. It looks
okay
like the way I'm reading it, but certainly Santa Muerte is absolutely a centerpiece of that culture. So, and so it's perfect for Penny Dreadful in that it has supernatural elements, but it's really focused on how messed up human beings are, right? And all all it takes is a little bit of influence and things go bad. And so the centerpiece of the opening episode is a gruesome murder of white people. And the bodies are laid out and displayed and decorated in such a way to suggest that the murderers are believers in Santa Muerte.
Okay.
So it sets up, in the context of the historical existence of these race riots and conflicts, a murder that also has religious and cultural tension and racism.
Interesting. Okay.
And so it feeds all of those areas where that I'm interested in genre, and Susan had the same reaction. We were both like, oh my God, this show is awesome. So it's, the centerpiece of the show is a Mexican-American detective, in the first Mexican-American detective in the L.A. police force. And the conflicts that sort of raises for him, obviously. He's partnered with an old, grizzled, sort of white a detective. And they are at the heart of the investigation of the murders. And the first episode ends with a confrontation between the people who live in one of these neighborhoods and where they're trying to bulldoze to bring progress to LA. It's a progress, quote unquote. So it's a hell of a show because it adds an interesting sort of twist on examining LA history and also injecting some really fascinating cultural. And I think it's absolutely sensitive to and is doing a very good job of depiction of multiple cultural perspectives. And one of the most sympathetic characters at the beginning of the show, which I'm not going to give away, is turned on its head when you learn later in the show exactly who this person is. So it's really good. It's really good. Anyway, that's my report. I will absolutely continue to watch and report on that show. And tonight is the second episode. So
yeah, I'm the season finale of Westworld is on tonight, and I'm considering canceling my HBO Go subscription and adding whatever subscription I need to so I can watch Penny Dreadful Showtime. Because, I mean, at this point, I'm ready. We read those first three. We love those first three seasons of Penny Dreadful when it was set in Victorian England, so I am jacked.
It's absolutely worthy.
Yeah. So, yep. we'll uh, we'll obviously hope for more reports on that because I'm ready for it. Okay. For sure.
Patrick. I think we lost Patrick.
Yeah, I think we lost Patrick.
Hello. Can you hear
me? Oh, yes, okay, there we go. Hey, there it is.
Okay, there we go. Okay. Good. I had to F with it a little bit. I was trying to contribute and you guys were not hearing me, so that But
it probably wasn't that great anyway.
There's only one Thanks.
It was probably forgettable.
There's only one episode.
I was wondering why I wasn't getting interrupted.
Oh.
That's definitely why.
That's great.
There's only one episode of this.
Yes, so far.
Yeah. Second one drops today.
Today,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
Tonight.
Yeah,
tonight.
I'll have to look into that. Definitely want to watch that. We watched all of the original series, and so yeah, it sounds cool. Really interesting.
Really interesting.
Oh, yeah. Cool. I'm down.
I get to pick. You know, Susan grew up almost every summer going to LA for long stretches to be out there with her grandparents, right? That she, for long stretches, she was in LA. And so I'm picking her brain about LA history. Cause she grew up out there as a child, almost every summer, I think, if not every summer, they went out there for long stretches, she and her sisters. And so, you know, where is this located, and can you pinpoint sort of, because she was all over the place when she was out there as a kid. So we'll have a good time watching it together because it brings up lots of interesting and great memory, because where Susan went and where she stayed, and her family was not well off. They were definitely middle class, lower middle class growing up. But you know, she had exposure to a lot of the neighborhoods that I think old historic neighborhoods in LA that are identified.
That's pretty cool.
In the show.
That's pretty fun.
It's fun. Yeah. Very fun.
Huh. Yeah.
Very, very cool. I'm trying to think if I had anything else. I've been playing a little Borderlands 3 again, even though it's not that great, but my friends are playing it. There's been some new content that's dropped on that. So that's really all I have to report. I mean, we watched Hannah and I watched The Martian last night. She hadn't seen it before, so we watched that.
That's a high quality film. That film is really good.
Well,
the book she's got to read the book.
The book is so fun. I agree. The book is great.
Yeah, it made me want to read the book again. Like watching the movie, it was so interesting.
I think I have it sitting on my shelf. I wonder. I do. Anyway, yeah, both of those are worth. I am, because Ashton has never seen it before, and she knows my love of it. We watched season one of Battlestar Galactica, the 13 episodes of season one. I thought it was more than that, but she's never seen it. We're not going to spoil anything for coming forward, because obviously she's sucked in enough that we're going to track down season two as soon as we can.
Nice.
And watch it. She's fascinated by the Cylons and who they are.
You know,
and
Andrew,
plan
while you're thinking, I might own that. Let me see if I can find that.
Okay.
And I'll bring it with me. We're coming up for Mother's Day weekend next weekend. Okay. I'll see if I can find that, because I think I own season two.
Okay. Cool.
On Blu-ray.
Yeah, check on that.
Are you guys going to have Mother's Day at 6 feet apart? Is that the plan?
Well, we're coming up on Saturday. We're not coming up day of. I think Mom is putting together or thinking about. I don't know what the progress is. If there's going to be a gathering at Daniel's or what, but
I'd assume so. If you guys are coming to town,
We're only coming up on Saturday. So Mother's Day for Susan will be down here. So
Wow.
I'm sure if you guys are coming up, Mom will try to push them together for
Daniel's
Saturday,
place is the only place that's big enough to accommodate and allow for social distancing. Dad is very freaked out, so he needs to stay away from everyone. So if it's going to happen, I don't know.
Who knows?
Willing. Yeah.
Why is Dad freaked out? Or he's just worried about the distance?
He doesn't want to die from COVID, dude.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, and he's in all the risk categories.
Yeah, he is. So, checks all the boxes.
He checks all the boxes.
For high risk to die of COVID. So
That's terrifying. That's terrifying.
Yeah, he's
very
worried about it. Yeah.
They've done some socializing. They've socialized with Guy and Kathy Mickelson a couple of times.
Yes.
Over the past couple of weeks. But they, yeah, he
leaves the house, but ultra rarely. So
ultra rarely, yeah. He hasn't gone to grocery stores. Dad loves to shop for groceries. Dad used to go shop for groceries once or twice a week, and he hasn't been to a grocery store in like 2.5 months. So yeah, Dad is very freaked out by that. So but yeah, we'll get that sorted out, and I'm sure if there's a social distancing Mother's Day celebration, it'll happen.
Yeah,
excellent.
At our brother Daniel's. Like next
I
said, weekend.
I own season 2. So
yeah. If you do, that's great.
I'll see if I'll find it and bring it.
Perfect.
Are you guys still getting down on the Warzone? How's that?
Oh yeah, Chris had a unique experience yesterday. Chris, what was your experience yesterday?
My experience was miserable, and it's not unique because it's an existing bug, and freaking Infinity Ward won't fix the freaking bug. But yesterday was my sort of most successful in terms of playing the game.
You were frying yesterday.
I was multiple back-to-back rounds where I was getting 5 and 6 kills. And tons of XP.
Usually you get like 2 or 3. That's me
too.
A high kill solo game is usually 5 or 6 kills.
Yeah.
Even for winners, it's 5 or 6 kills.
Right. Yeah. So I was playing great. I had multiple top tens. I was playing great. And like 4 or 5 games in a row that I was getting 3, 4, 5 kills, right? Doing lots of contracts. I would die, right? You know, finish in the teens or maybe in the 20s, something like that. And 0 XP as a result. And it's a double XP weekend. It's a double XP, double battle pass, double weapon XP weekend.
Jeez.
And I would be killing it. Multiple games in a row, 0 XP. So my level didn't advance, my battle pass level didn't advance, and my weapons, I would get my loadout. I'm working on a specific gun. I want that loadout to grow. I want that those weapons to level up. No XP to anything. I was so angry. I'm not an angry gamer normally, but
when things are working terribly,
right? It's very frustrating. So I was very, very frustrated yesterday. And I've done some research. This isn't a known bug, and they haven't fixed it. And it's driving me crazy. So,
yeah.
But it hasn't, you know,
We still played some games last night.
We did. We played together. I have fun. The game is fun. So,
yeah. I read something online today that, I mean, I haven't played much yesterday just because I was spending time with Ashton, but.
Good job.
Saturdays have become like our days to spend
that's
together.
Nice.
There's been before we ran out of Battlestar Galactica episodes to watch. I think we watched 4 Battlestar Galactica episodes last Saturday alone. We fried through season 1. And there's only 13. I thought there were more. I was frustrated. We got to the end of season 1 where Boomer, you know, shoots Adama.
Yeah.
Happened. Right. Like she lost her fucking mind. Yeah. She was losing it when we watched that. I knew it was coming, and I'm like sitting there, and the whole episode is basically built, you know, all the tension and the plot threads are coming together. And she's like sitting on the edge of my couch, like watching this happen.
Yeah.
And then Boomer shoots Adama, and Adama's like bleeding to death or whatever on the console in the CIC. And she like looks at me and she's like, "Is that the last episode?" And I'm like, "Yeah." Oh my goodness, that huge cliffhanger happened. We immediately go to Amazon Prime. We're like, can we, like, how much is it to download season 2 on Amazon Prime? It was $40 to rent season 2. We're like, we don't know if we'll have enough time to watch, because season 2 is, they go to the 20 episode length season. We would have to really binge season 2.
And they split it up too. It was like 10 and 10. So yeah, that's like a mid season cliffhanger too in that, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. That was Sci-Fi Channel's was their model for a long time. But she looked at me, she's like, What?
Tell her. Don't spoil it.
I didn't say shit. No, like, tell me if he lives. I'm like, I'm not gonna tell you anything.
Yeah.
So she is sucked in, man. So we got a season two. We're gonna watch that as soon as we can find it. So if you have it, that's press case.
I'll look today. See if I can
That'd be awesome. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was. She's really
on Netflix for the longest time. I'm really sad that they like took those off because those were fun to watch. They're not on Prime.
Free on Prime. They're for rental. The other side of this rewatch is the fact. I mean, I've seen these all before. But I never watched them on Netflix. I don't think I've ever done like a serious rewatch of Battlestar since they initially aired.
Oh, wow. So
it's been 10 plus years since I've watched some of these episodes.
Wow, cool.
And I mean, our fandom of Battlestar coincided with going to cons every summer, going to the Battlestar Galactica panels every summer, being totally sucked into that. When you've listened to the Ronald D. Moore podcast about, I mean, it was right around that time when we were deep into the Lost fandom culture and we were watching Lost every week. So we had like those multiple long form shows going at once.
Yep.
And then, but I haven't rewatched them in a decade almost.
Yeah.
So
you are definitely feeling my fire to do a rewatch of Battlestar.
Yeah. And
you're feeling my fire because you were talking about watching them with Ronald D. Moore's commentary on our commentary track. I think if I was going to rewatch them, I'd watch them with the commentary because like,
I think if I was doing a solo rewatch, but watching them with Ashton, I mean, obviously I can't do that.
With someone who's never seen them before.
I'm loving it to like watch it again and you know experience it again, a lot of it picking up other things like for the first time that I may not have noticed before, and just her excitement and her being sucked into it, it's a lot of fun to
very
have
fun.
Like be into it as well. So yeah, season two as soon as we can.
Well, it's gonna be great. She's probably young enough that she'd never watched the original.
Oh no, that's the thing. Yeah, she was like 11 or 12. I mean,
so she's not comparing it to the original.
Exactly.
Which part of the amazing sort of experience for me was I watched all of the original.
And you were young. Were you 10, 11 when that came out?
I don't remember exactly the timing, but I was a huge fan of the original. I had the fighters. I mean, I had all kinds of gear.
From the Vipers?
Show. Yeah, the Vipers. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I drew the Vipers. You know, I was totally I was into it. Yeah.
That's fun, man.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Do you prefer the reimagining or do you prefer the original?
Oh, definitely the reimagining. The original had awesome elements to it that were unique and very cool. But the new show is better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to just mention something and then we can call this episode. But this week they released a trailer for the new Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Have you guys
seen this? That? Yes.
I played the crap out of Odyssey and I love that this is Vikings and we are
Vikings.
I have never played an Assassin's Creed and Valhalla might get me to play
because
it's set in Vikings.
It's Odyssey is incredible and we get to play as Vikings and we get to like run around
and it's going to have I thought I saw somewhere that it's going to have some kind of settlement mechanic. Like you'll be able to set up your own Viking colony,
Viking village, and it changes depending on in Odyssey that was like your ship was your like home and it would change depending on choices you made and like you could upgrade it like crazy and you could change it changed how it looked.
I love that they're moving that mechanic into a village. That's a great idea.
I mean that was part of the Viking culture is they expanded through Northern Europe because they needed resources and they set up. I mean, that's why there's redheads that come from Scandinavia and there's redheads in Ireland because the Vikings settled in Ireland.
100%. So I just wanted to mention that because that trailer.
Exactly.
It's just a cinematic trailer, so you don't get to see much gameplay, which I'm always disappointed by.
But as a person who's played, I got to ask you, Patrick, because I haven't played any Assassin's Creed games, and I tried to play Witcher 3 when the Witcher series was out, but I found the controls were just beyond me and they weren't customizable. what kind of customization is
no idea. I played the can version. Okay, so whatever.
I would be interested in getting the
default controls and I'm used to it, but like it plays a lot like, you know, it's a third person run around, you know.
I mean, I can play. I just wasn't. Yeah. I need to be able to switch my sticks or I'm useless. I have to have Southpaw sticks or I'm useless.
it's most games. I would say like it's the exception to the rule.
Witcher 3 was just so old that you couldn't.
Well, and it was made by a smaller studio. Like,
Witcher 3 updated that. You can switch. You can update. Witcher 3 is playable now, Andrew. So
really?
Oh yeah. Okay.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. But I saw that trailer too, Patrick, and I love the whole idea of the Assassin's Creed. I love the universe, like all, and I haven't played any games, but like if I was to dive into a game, I would either dive into Odyssey, which has been out and people have raved about, or I will dive into Valhalla just because it looks
awful. I came back to it because I started to lose interest in it because when they started to get too modern, but like I loved like the Greek mythology aspect of it. Yeah. And the Greek Spartan War is like the centerpiece, and I love that stuff. And you could like choose the side, and like you could just do whatever you want. And there's like, I mean, I don't want to ruin anything for you, but there are myth, like Greek myth, like quests and stuff like that. And the game is incredible, and it goes on and on and on. And I played the crap out of it. And now that this is like. And I love Norse mythology too. And I love that, like in the trailer, you can even see like there's a figure by the tree who's touching the tree, and a raven flies over. And it's supposed to be. Mm. I watch like people talking about it, and that's supposed to be Odin. And there's like
it have like that supernatural component.
There's always a supernatural component. Like this universe, it has normal stuff in it, and it has historical things that are going on, but there's also like this touch of like,
that's very cool,
myth and legend. And
it looks like it could be the first game that's available for the new Xbox, right?
That's what they're saying. Yeah, I think it'll optimized be optimized for the Series X. Yeah,
it sounds like to me, and I don't know, I mean, people are more knowledgeable of this than I am, and I don't know the exact timelines, but I would assume it'll be one of the launch titles for the Xbox Series X, that and Halo Infinite, I'm sure.
Yep.
Assassin's Creed is a title on the level of Halo almost. So
yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Pretty cool. It'll be pretty cool.
I would say Origins, Odyssey, and then this is like the resurgence, because they had like kind of a dip in their numbers. Ubisoft has been struggling the past couple of years. So but like I would say Odyssey was like a hit for them. I'm just excited about that. So go watch that trailer and be excited with me and let me know what you think. Andrew.
Yeah.
Do you have any trivia for us?
I sure do. And because it's May the 3rd, it's Star Wars themed.
Uh-huh.
In the entire Skywalker saga, what is the total viewing length?
Oh my god,
the entire Star Wars Skywalker saga,
by minutes? You're doing by minutes?
I'll give you 100 plus or minus 100 minutes. What is the entire
100? So it's got,
you gotta be pretty precise, man. I'll cross all 9 films. What is the viewing length?
I would say
in minutes.
I would say the average is probably around like 120 minutes is the average, and we have 9 films. Are we counting Rogue Squadron?
Skywalker saga movies.
Thank you. Okay, so let me do some math real quick. Let me calculate. Times 9. Okay, so I'm gonna give you
1400 is my guess.
1400 minutes.
1400. Yep.
1400 minutes. Okay, that's Chris's guess.
I'm going to do 1253.
Patrick is closest because it is 1226. Right?
Nice.
That's pretty good.
Episode 1 is 2 hours and 16 minutes. Episode 2 is 2 hours and 22 minutes. Episode 3 is 2 hours and 20 minutes. Episode 4 is 2 hours and 1 minute. Episode 5 is 2 hours and 4 minutes. Episode 6 is 2 hours and 14 minutes. Episode 7 is 2 hours and 15. Episode 8, the longest Star Wars film. Episode 8, The Last Jedi, 2 hours and 32 minutes.
Yeah, that was long. Nine
is 2 hours and 22 minutes.
Wow.
We're a grand total.
My back of the envelope math was I just went to two and a half hours.
Yeah.
2.5 hours. So
yeah.
That makes sense.
I knew that they were always like two in change. Like it was like two and ten. So, but I knew that Last Jedi was the longest. I knew it felt long. Yeah.
Is the single day Skywalker saga viewing possible?
Oh my God. I mean,
would you even want to inflict that on yourself? Like the exhaustion that would entail?
You could do it tomorrow. Maybe I just try to do it tomorrow. May the 4th.
You're not working. There's nothing in production right now.
That's an all nighter, dude. That's an all nighter.
I mean,
that's literally starting at 7 a.m. and finishing at 5 a.m.
No,
or 20 hours, yes. Dude. You're watching straight through. You're starting at 7 in the morning, and you're not finishing until the wee hours of the next morning.
Correct.
That's insane.
Yeah. Is it possible? That's the thing.
It's definitely possible.
I mean, how do you
structuring your day would
you just have to skip the Clone Wars. Like we don't need to watch. Like you have to skip the prequels. They're poop. I did the whole rewatch before
They're part of the saga, dude. You can't skip them.
You can't rule out three whole films.
Come on.
I did the whole rewatch before we watched The Rise of Skywalker. I did one every day leading up to that. I think that was a lot of fun watching one every day. But I think I'll watch Rise of Skywalker tomorrow.
I'll watch Rise of Skywalker tomorrow.
I think
for sure. I will definitely.
Okay, so
maybe we should do a watch along.
So if we're gonna do a watch along, then we got to plan that, and I won't rewatch it tomorrow. You know, so maybe I'll watch it tomorrow.
We should do a watch along tomorrow.
Well, I'm
on May 4th. We recorded episode 1 of this podcast on May the 4th.
We really did.
Yep. So, I mean, thanks for listening. If you're still listening and you've been here since the first May the 4th, but May the 4th be with you. And thank you, Andrew, for your trivia. You can email Andrew to help him with his trivia at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com. Email the podcast, brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, brothers_geek. Spotify, iTunes, Brothers Geek Podcast, Facebook, Brothers Geek Podcast, Brothers Geek Do Stuff on Instagram. Did I get them all? I think I got them all. BrothersGeek.com.
Never forget Han shot first.
Sorry.